Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today we're going to be taking a walk through three different topics that have crossed our news feeds in the last 7 days that impact what we do here in international education in the United States. For those who are not familiar with what we do at SMIE Consulting, we take a look at all the various news stories of international ed import that we see from around the world. And each Monday, we provide a newsletter called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And we do that to provide kind of an easy-to-digest news feed or email newsletter for you to help you understand more about what's going on in our profession and ways to help you get a sense of our takes on how these stories might impact what you do in your own offices here in the U.S. And we take a broad range look at issues that are international ed focused in the U.S., but also in other major destination markets for international students to see how our competitors, frankly, are dealing with the relative challenges that are, they face around the world in recruiting students and managing education abroad programs. Now, for those who aren't familiar, I've dropped a link to the most recent edition of the SMIE News letter. That comes out on Monday mornings, and we take three of the stories that we have in the newsletter from Monday, and we profile those here on the Midweek Roundup on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern. So if this is your first time joining, thank you so much for being a part of our live broadcast. And if you have questions along the way, just want to say a quick shout out, please drop a comment in on the Facebook page. For those that are watching either the rerun on our Facebook page or the YouTube channel for SMIE Consulting, thank you for watching after the fact. And we hope you find some nuggets in here that will help in your daily work. And to those who are listening on the podcast, this is podcasted as well on all your major from all your major providers. Look for SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup, and you'll be able to download on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, and Spotify. So we're glad that you're part of the journey today, and let's jump right in with a story that will not go away. And diseases of the past. The coronavirus is also one that we're seeing. It has some legs here and is continuing to run. Though there seems to be, and certainly from contacts I have in China, there is now a bit more freedom of movement. The reality is most people have been cooped up inside, even outside of Hubei province, cooped up inside. Schools have been canceled across the country. U.S. Embassy has closed services and consulates have closed visa services for quite some time since the beginning of the month. So there are real challenges in China. Trains are running, but they're not stopping in Hubei province, in Wuhan in particular, where it's kind of the epicenter of this epidemic. What we're focusing on today as it impacts international education is what are the real costs? And for Australia, we talked a little bit last week about how Australia as a country is obviously very dependent on international students from China. They make up 38% of all of their international students in the country. And as I've just posted the link to a story from the Sydney Morning Herald, it profiles the larger economic impact of China and Australia in terms of their relationship. Right now, the Chinese economy constitute $175 billion of exports from Australia to China, and education is one of those. I think it's the fifth largest export after minerals, gold, fossil fuels, agriculture. Education is the fifth largest export to China in 2019 for Australia. So that represents almost 10% of Australia's GDP is directly tied to China, with education being a part of that, a huge part of that. That's a significant concern in terms of how much longer that's going to last. The word is that the travel ban for Chinese to Australia, coming to Australia, may be lifted soon. So if that happens, that could be a real silver lining for universities in Australia, which are missing over half of their Chinese students that haven't been able to return to start classes. They've been looking at all sorts of band-aid approaches to delaying arrivals, to offering online options for students that are still in China. And that's even forced, as we talked about last week, forced China to relax some of its very strict internet regulations in terms of what students can access from within the country. So this article in the Sydney Morning Herald certainly talks about the broader impact of what this is doing on international student recruitment, but also the broader Australian economy. That is, it's billions of dollars, Australian dollars, that are impacted and potentially lost as a result of the restrictions now on travel to and from China to Australia. So it's there are some signs that it may be peaking in Australia, though we're seeing other countries have their first cases. Brazil, Italy, of all places, is now under significant challenge, with impacting not just hospitals and that type of thing, but it's impacting sporting events. There are Six Nations rugby match between Ireland and Italy. It was called off as a result today because of how it's impacting Italy. So countries that you wouldn't normally expect to be significant players or significantly affected by the virus are really starting to feel a pinch. So the epicenter is spreading away from Wuhan in terms of the tentacles of this disease are certainly, and virus are spreading around the globe. And will it get worse before it gets better outside the U.S. or outside of China? Probably. And that will, it's going to pose a huge host of other issues. Some saying that the U.S. is still under threat and expect coronavirus cases here to expand. But let's get back to our what we're talking about here in international education and what we can do about it. I've seen there's been a lot of great resources that have popped up lately. And I want to give a shout out to three groups in particular. INTED, NAFSA, and International ACAC have all had spent significant bandwidth over the last week or two to helping give institutions some resources and some kind of food for thought in terms of how they can use this opportunity with regard to the coronavirus and how it's impacting our campuses. In terms of new students coming in, obviously for January entry, there may have been impacts there. Some of them might have got in before that, depending on when your orientations were. But certainly affecting study abroad programs, it's affecting recruitment to Asia. A lot of Asian recruitment tours are either canceled or put on hold or skipping certain areas. But you're seeing the bubble expand to what countries are being affected. South Korea's got significant challenges now with coronavirus. Other countries, Hong Kong, are impacted as well. Vietnam potentially. There's more out there in terms of where you'll be able to go in terms of direct recruitment travel this fall. A lot of schools, even outside China, have been put on temporary leave or closed for the time being. So what INTED has done is they've come up with about 10 recommendations to how this can be put in perspective and maybe next steps for how to move forward. And I'll highlight just a few of those here. Really, it's in terms of the real focus on what can we do with the students that are still in our pipeline. And that's first and foremost is relying on something that should have been a part of your China strategy already, and that's digital communications to connect with your Chinese prospective students, current students. That you probably have digital marketing efforts that are going on currently. You want to talk about what those might be. You might have to offer a special edition webinar, live stream events on platforms that are accessible, perhaps on WeChat or others in China that you know that your audiences will be able to access. It's also a challenge when you might need to be flexible in your admissions criteria because of testing issues. When TOEFL, IELTS, SAT, ACT, all the major testing opportunities, February, March, potentially into April, are being canceled. So there's even talk, as we talked a little bit about last week, that the Gaokao in June may even be under threat in terms of if the outbreak has not been contained by then. There's real challenge here in terms of for what students in China are even going to be able to do. So if you English proficiency is probably the one that is going to impact everybody. And are there ways that you can have an alternative? Can you do direct interviews with that certainly doesn't answer how well they can write and but certainly can talk to their speaking ability, their ability to listen and to respond appropriately. So are there ways that you can go around that? Is there a test that you can deliver electronically, perhaps a institutional SAT or institutional TOEFL, or is that something that can be done that way? So looking at alternatives. So that's certainly something that's important. If you have a network of partners in China, reaching out to them and finding out from them what's going on, what is possible, what are you able to do, what is not possible at the time. So connecting with your alumni that you have in China, hopefully you do have some and you're connected with them and they're involved in what you're doing on the prospective student front. And that's important. But one area you certainly don't want to neglect is how your current Chinese students are doing and their success on campus, as Inted points out in one of their insights, is there's been a lot of cases where Chinese students are being targeted, not just Chinese, but Asian students are being targeted because, well, as they're unhealthy and they're a virus threat to us. And that's xenophobia, plain and simple. And that needs to be addressed on your campuses. And your students need to be made aware of resources that you have to help them adjust. And talking about those issues is important because your health of your current students now, not just their physical health, but their mental health, their state of mind, as it relates to whether they're feeling support by your institution, is mission critical. This is not just in cases of that we have now that are unprecedented in terms of the kind of impact that it can have on our current students, but it goes whenever you have students that are potentially under threat from external forces. It's how you respond to that that's going to go a long way to determine your success as an institution in that market. So taking care of your students should be priority one anyway. But this is just reinforcing that idea, I think, is and Inted's very right to point that out. On the study abroad side, faculty side that are traveling, partners that you have in China, just and beyond really, that are in that region, that you need to make them aware of what's happening and what the policies are and what they can do to address these issues. So good job, Inted, in terms of pointing out those important resources. And I'm also going to drop some links on here in the comments section from NAFSA. They've got a great website in terms of what the timelines have been, what the official government statements have been. So I think that's always useful to have. A couple of these are, in fact, I think many of these are members-only resources. So if you're not a NAFSA member, some of these links won't work for you. But I do want to recommend you take a look at those because if you have access, it'll help you provide your on-campus folks with some resources if they're not aware of what's going on. NAFSA also hosted a webinar recently related to that. I posted the link to that to watch the recording and/or read the transcripts. So very helpful, I think, from current NAFSA president Ravi Shankar at the University of Rochester. That was just this past week on the 20th of February. So check that out. For those who are strictly working on the secondary school side, there's a great resource, another webinar that International ACAC had this past week on the coronavirus and what that means. It's got some great resources for schools as well as universities that are recruiting in the area in terms of timetables and what the current lay of the land is on the ground for institutions that may have plans upcoming to the region. So definitely check that out. So well worth some time and minutes of your time to get up to speed as to what's currently happening with the coronavirus as it impacts universities and schools around the world. Now, shifting gears, our next topic is I cover it not so much as the news story that it represents because it's from a work permit company in Africa that's working with Africans trying to go abroad. It's a story, and I'll put that caveat on it. It's from a site called workpermit.com, and they have offices throughout Africa that are helping helping students, potential immigrants, who workers that want to go abroad from African countries for study, for other things, for employment, and it's addressing what they see as, and certainly the rhetoric would certainly back that up, there are challenges with the UK in terms of their policy towards African visa applicants, and this is sadly, it seems to be along similar lines to what the U.S. has been accused of in terms of their increased rhetoric, anti-immigrant rhetoric, and potentially discriminatory rhetoric related to visa applicants from certain parts of the world, certain types of countries that our current president has not used favorable language towards. That's something that we want to certainly don't want to say that the UK is exactly like the US in this regard, but certainly there are people from the Ethiopian Prime Minister has come out and said, as well as others in the region, that the UK visa and immigration system towards African countries is draconian. In the Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed of Ethiopia. The special advisor, to the Prime Minister, Akebi Okubai, has said that they are destroying relations with African countries as a result of their strict visa rules. Claims are that the current Prime Minister Boris Johnson has declared his country will have a new kind of immigration policy based on treating people the same wherever they come from, by putting people before passports. That sounds great on the surface, but apparently the reality is on the ground that certain countries are being treated less favorably in terms of the mix of who's invited in. So the article itself, I think, talks a little bit about how the piece that I focused on, obviously, is how they talk about student visas here. And the comment that was particularly useful here is, as it impacts Mr. Okubai, who was educated in the UK, this is the special assistant to the Prime Minister in Ethiopia. He said that students attending higher education institutions in Britain will become the next generation of business leaders, government officials, and community representatives in countries around the world, and that student visas should be the easiest of visas to receive because of that fact. And that's something that certainly that philosophy he takes is he's a product of. He came from Ethiopia, was educated in the UK, returned home, and is now in that country's government. And that's very much similar to what the State Department here in the U.S. Treats international education as a public diplomacy tool. We talked about that before, how the goal is for those that come from abroad to be foreign students today, world leaders tomorrow. And there's a huge track record of world leaders. I think at one point there was a third of all world leaders had spent some part of their educational experience here in the U.S. So if the U.K. is looking to go along those lines, as Mr. Okubai says, that would make sense that to be as open as possible, and he certainly doesn't see that. So it's an issue that I think it's interesting in context because you look at what's happened recently with the U.S. And the updated travel bans that specifically exclude student visa applicants from those that are banned from entry, that there were a number of African countries that were included, Nigeria being the most prominent in the two versions of the, or two or three or four versions of the travel bans that we've had. But it also doesn't impact other countries in Africa, Sudan, Somalia, Eritrea, and others. So we want to be we've seen some pushback that those countries are being targeted because they're Muslim majority countries, and that's certainly something that has been the case with all but two or three exceptions of the various travel bans the current administration has put in place. When it comes to the bans that are put in place for national security reasons, in that the host countries that we're putting bans on do not provide adequate information sharing on their populace that are applying for visas. So there are certain standards the U.S. has, and that if certain countries don't meet these standards, then they're going to be put on the ban list. these bans are problematic, obviously, because that the public face of it is U.S. does not want your student want people from your country to come to our country. And that, even though there is the exception for students, the overall impression is a negative one towards students and anybody living in those countries. So the UK is running afoul of it here. Obviously, the feedback that African nations are giving. Canada has recently had these challenges in certain countries in Nigeria, Ghana, others in West Africa. There have been well over half to, I think, 80 or 90% of visa applicants were denied at one stage. So the challenges are real for Africans that are looking to come study abroad, whether the U.S., U.K., Canada. And that's certainly something that we as international educators need to be aware of and certainly need to be advocating for to our elected representatives through various advocacy opportunities, through NACAC, through NAFSA, that you certainly can and should be a part of getting, an, even if not direct group efforts like through international ACAC or NAFSA or at NACAC, there are ways that you can be in touch with your own congressman. As international educators, we should know who they are. We should have their emails addresses. We should be on their Facebook pages. We should follow them on social media. We should know and have an ability to contact them. If we don't physically go to DC and participate in these advocacy efforts, go to their local offices and talk to their local reps to express your concerns as a citizen, as a voting citizen in their districts. So this is something obviously we all should be aware of as international educators and know how we are seen and appreciated or not in different parts of the world. But we, at our core, we need to go back to the student experience and how are our institutions treating those students we do have on our campuses, because they are our lifeblood as international educators. And how we treat them now will have benefits years down the road if we do it right. And if their experiences are positive and they are ones who can become good advocates for your university, but also for the United States when they return home. So that's something we always need to take significant pause when these kind of issues come up and figure out how are we meeting these students' needs. Now, a lot of times the stories that I cover both here on the Roundup and also in the newsletter that comes out on Mondays, maybe off the beaten path type of services, and I've had some colleagues that have thanked me for including these kind of other stories that are not Wall Street Journal and New York Times all the time in terms of what we profile here. Obviously, when those high level news outlets cover stories, we certainly want to include that where we can, but a lot of them are subscription based and aren't available to the general public. So I try and make these as accessible as possible to paint a larger picture of what we do in international education and the essential elements I think need to be at the heart of what we do with regard to international education and particularly international student recruitment. And this last topic, what international students need, is a definite piece of that, a central piece of that, because far too often we as international educators often take for granted students once they get to campus and the experiences that they have on our campuses, unless you're in an all-in-one office where you do the admissions orientation, advising, and programming for your international students, you don't have that mindset necessarily on this holistic experience that your internationals will have while they're with you. So I know that that's just the nature of the beast when you're in an admissions office and you're out there recruiting, you bring them in, maybe you have a role in an orientation, but there's a definite handoff at some point. And then you're on to the next class. That's just the way it goes. But the realities are that the better we are at keeping our relationships with the students we recruit and showing the care and concern for them while they're students on our campuses, the better impact that's going to have on that student's impression of you as a person, you as a representative of your institution, and of the United States as a whole. So again, it's part of our responsibility as international educators to maintain those relationships and know what's going on. And when needs arise, like what we're seeing with the coronavirus and how it's impacting different campus constituencies, is what is your responsibility to your current students not just the ones that you're trying to get in the door, but more so, how are you taking care of the ones you already have on campus? Because they can do more damage if they're not treated well and are feeling ostracized than any amount of new students that come in, because they'll tell their friends back home, hey, you don't want to come here anymore, so because they don't treat you right. So I turned to an article from Diablo Valley College, their student newspaper called Inquirer. It's called Far From Home, International Students Face New Challenges. It profiles a couple of different students in this article, one of which came from Indonesia at 17 years old. She really, it was very, very much a push factor that was making her leave Indonesia to come to the United States. She's at Diablo Valley, a respected community college, and one that has a significant number of international students on campus already. So they have a good track record of recruiting abroad and certainly know what they're doing. But the school has 22,000 students, and among community colleges nationwide in 2014, Diablo Valley had the sixth largest population of foreign students among all U.S. community colleges. So what the challenges that this article points out is this community college students and the kind of students that attend that come over younger, between 16 or 17, 18 years old, that there are significant barriers that they have to adjusting to college life that perhaps older students, certainly graduate students, might not face on a regular basis. So the article in interviewing her talks about kind of an invisible wall between local and international students on campus and the wider community. Call for and part of it is international students don't know what they need necessarily until they've been here and they have experienced it and see where the gaps are, because they don't know what life is going to be like here. It's all been what they see on the TV and in the news, and maybe they've had some conversations with students from their country, but that might be the extent of their experience with what life is like on our campuses and in our country. So the expressions for more mental health services for international students who need help adapting to their new lives, more cultural events spotlighting international students, and many universities have certainly been doing that. Colleges have been doing this for years, and those are all great resources, but some schools don't have those in as large a quantity as perhaps they need to. So it's all about focusing on the students and their needs and making sure that they have what they want, that you're keeping those regular check-ins with students that to make sure that they're adapting to campus life and getting them involved in campus life, because frankly that's a piece of the experience that international students probably know the least about, is what they should expect once they get on campus in terms of campus life and activities and organizations and events that they can be going to that really help fill their time and help them become a part of the community. And that's the piece that universities that are doing it well, certainly ones that have excellent track records in terms of recruitment, and certainly see success on a longer term basis with many of those schools. So for me, my focus is always on making sure the student experience is as positive as it can be, and those that even in the midst of crises that affect countries around the world, your focus is always on the student and their needs in particular. So I wish you all the best in the coming week as for those that are practicing Christians and are entering the Lent period. It started today with Ash Wednesday through the next 6 weeks leading up to Easter. Hopefully you're not giving up watching the Roundup as part of your Lenten challenges. So do hope that we connect again in the coming weeks as part of the Roundup, but also at future events. We'll be at NAFSA at the end of May in St. Louis, my hometown. I'll also be at the International ACAC Conference in New Mexico, at the University of New Mexico in July. So looking forward to seeing you out on the road somewhere soon. And have a great day, and we'll talk to you next week.